Madam Chair DeMarkey, members of the ESF Board of Trustees, distinguished members of the Platform Party, ESF faculty, staff and students, family and friends, Marie and I are deeply honored by your presence and that of the other honored guests mentioned previously, and the current and past chancellors and presidents in attendance. This is a historic day in the life of the State University of New York College of Environmental Science and Forestry, not because I stand before you as its fourth president, but for what the day represents. Such investiture ceremonies have been held by universities since the Middle Ages. They are waypoints, opportunities to reflect on an institution's milestones, progress, and direction, while passing the symbols and authority of the institution's highest office to its new president. I am honored by the trust you have placed in me, humbled to follow in the footsteps of those who have built this most special institution, and eager to accept the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead. This century will be dominated by environmental challenges, natural resources exploited to the breaking point, uncertainties of climate change, diminished and degraded ecosystems, a citizenry increasingly urban and remote from wildlife, and the sobering thought that, at the present rate of extinction, unless we make changes, 75% of all the kinds of plants and animals on Earth will be gone in just 300 years. The last time our planet was witness to such a massive loss of biodiversity was 65 million years ago. That time, the great dinosaurs perished by no fault of their own. This time, one species, Homo sapiens, is driving the event and threatening its own survival in the process. There is good news. It's not too late to mitigate the losses, to find sustainable alternatives to meet our needs, to protect largely intact ecosystems, to write a happy ending to the story. As we confront these frightening specters of what will be if we fail, we should take solace in the great good we can achieve and share with the public the small triumphs along the way, always spreading hope and inspiration. We do not want environmentalists to fall into the wrong group in Oscar Wilde's dichotomy, who said there are two kinds of people, those who spread joy wherever they go, and those who spread it whenever they go. In spite of clear voices of warning, Peter Raven, Ed Wilson, Tom Lovejoy, and many others, neither our society at large nor the scientific community are responding in the ways necessary or on a scale sufficient to these challenges. What is missing is institutional leadership. Institutions of vision and courage, willing to risk breaking from the herd, leading by example, and blazing a new trail. The values of too many institutions have been turned upside down by competition for large-scale science funding. For too many, grants have become an end rather than a means, and the most pressing needs for research thereby ignored. This Kardashian science, celebrating scientists who have the most money and confusing modern for better, is out of step with the realities of the great challenges of our time. We should remember that Isaac Newton, Linnaeus, and Darwin did okay as scientists and without a single government grant. Competing for grants is necessary, of course, in today's world, but as a means of pursuing answers to pressing questions and obtained without losing sight of the important goals that lie in education, discovery, problem solving, outreach, and preserving the natural world. The alternative to being enslaved by fashions of pop science is inspired leadership. By tackling the most important questions, by doing so in a manner that invites public participation and understanding, and by demonstrating the relevant and transformational impacts of such work, it is possible to create funding opportunities rather than respond to them, to attract investors who want to be part of truly making the world better. ESF was founded to confront an urgent environmental challenge that had emerged by the end of the 19th century. When ESF opened its doors in 1911, the great northern forests of New York had been diminished to less than 25% of the state's surface area by careless extraction of timber. Now, New York is 65% forested, a testament to ESF's approach to forest management, whose science we would today describe as sustainable. Now, 103 years later, the world faces a very different set of environmental challenges, greater in number, larger in scale, complexity, and implications. The ESF community, with its passion for the environment, small and nimble size, access to America's great experiment in conservation, the Adirondacks, and networked with the great institutions of SUNY, is perfectly poised to create a new vision, take the necessary risks, become a model institution for the confrontation of this new generation of problems. The challenges before us are incredibly complicated. It follows that effective solutions will be no less complex. This means breaking down the barriers between disciplines to assemble the kind of diverse teams only possible on a university campus, preparing a new kind of environmental leader for a world changing more rapidly than ever before, confronting issues not from within the walls of the ivory tower, but in an open way that invites public understanding and participation, and building a coalition of institutions across the state, nation, and world to scale up solutions to meet the harsh realities. I challenge our dedicated and creative faculty and staff to redesign the ESF experience for undergraduates, creating a unique and comprehensive set of classes and experiences on our campus, in our field stations, in our experimental forests, in the communities in which we work, that fully prepares the next generation of environmental leaders. The ESF experience should be a combination of curricular and experiential learning that gives to ESF grads the knowledge, competencies, literacy, skills, experiences, views, and ethics that, in aggregate, make them uniquely qualified to tackle the unprecedented challenges ahead. Let's compile a list of learning outcomes that distinguish our grads from all others and that stretch the normal definition and boundaries of education. Finding scientific and technological solutions is no longer enough. In order to fundamentally shift our society to a more sustainable footing, will require broad public support. As Abraham Lincoln put it, with public sentiment, nothing can fail. Without it, nothing can succeed. In our wishes to preserve the diversity of life underpinning the planet's dynamic biosphere, we are losing ground, and our national willpower to do more is stifled by irreconcilable differences across the political spectrum. It is naive, after decades, to think that we are approaching this in the right way. Environmentalism, having a concern for the status and welfare of the planet you live on, should not be a controversial or partisan thing, but a responsibility equally shared by all. The inspiring symposium yesterday began to lay the foundations for a new kind of American environmentalism, urgently needed to break the political impasse, to remind Americans that they have a stake in the struggle for a sustainable way of life, to be inclusive, hearing all voices in the debate, to provide objective science for fact-based policies, and to re-examine our ethics and values so that they inform and shape our priorities. Being right is not enough. We must be right for the right reasons. Recent statements to the public that they should accept man-made global warming as fact because most climate scientists agree it is so sends the wrong message. They should accept it because the data says the average temperatures are rising. Before 1543, all learned men agreed that the sun obviously orbited the Earth. Throwing science under the bus to win a debate is no victory. As a SUNY research campus, we have a sacred responsibility to protect and uphold the integrity of science. Data, information, and knowledge belong to humanity and must be seen to be objective, testable, and openly available to all. But even this is not enough. As Isaac Asimov said, the saddest aspect of life right now is that science gathers knowledge faster than society gathers wisdom. Through our collaboration with all the relevant branches of human endeavor, we must also engage in the tireless search for wisdom, to be a source of guidance to society as it makes irreversible decisions about the environment in this, a century of tipping points. ESF's work, thus, does not end at the edge of campus. Increasing science literacy in the public is imperative. It is as is awakening the love of nature in children. Environmental disasters do not distinguish among socioeconomic groups or religious creeds. We all prosper or suffer alike on a small blue dot. It is the job of science to provide the facts, theories, and projections. It is the right of every human being to have a say in how that knowledge is used in the creation of the future. We must recognize and begin to close an alarming and widening gap between urban dwellers with smartphones ingrown into their hands and nature. People will not vote or make sacrifices or invest the limited resources necessary into environmental projects based on statistics alone. People who have personal, meaningful interactions with the natural world are those who will be so inclined. And it is not enough to say that we need to save biodiversity. If science does not care enough about the individual species making up the living machinery of the biosphere to give them names, to learn what they contribute to ecosystems, and to make them recognizable, why should the general public care enough to pay to save them? We must put a face on biodiversity by telling the amazing natural history stories that each and every kind of plant, animal, and microbe has to share. ESF will aspire to be America's preeminent college of the environment, to be a trusted partner among the country's great institutions of higher learning and discovery, to be the spark that ignites a revolution leading to a new and effective American environmentalism, and to be an inspiration to children and citizens as a bridge to nature, and to be a national leader in environmental work where we can have special relevance and impact. Historians of science say that asking the right question is more important than finding the right answer. When scientists ask the right question, it inevitably leads to major breakthroughs. While remaining adaptable to unforeseen opportunities, ESF will select a handful of questions right for us. These may include a subset of questions in an area already being pursued by national laboratories or other universities, or they may fill gaps in scientific knowledge, but either way, they will be selected because of what ESF can contribute to science, society, and the biosphere. Let me illustrate what one simple question, impossible to answer in exact form, and currently ignored by other institutions, could lead to. What are Earth's species? To answer this question, we must complete an inventory of the flora and fauna. In so doing, we create an ecological baseline against which we can detect invasives, measure extinctions, and set measurable conservation goals. We must individuate and name species by learning and describing what attributes make each unique. In so doing, we see each species as a masterpiece of adaptation to environmental change, and we open a floodgate for the emerging field of biomimicry. For 3.8 billion years, natural selection has rewarded the good ideas for survival and weeded out the bad ones. We need only study these evolutionary adaptations to reveal billions and billions of models and inspiration for sustainable alternatives to better meet our own needs in greater harmony with the biosphere. Biomimicry is a hot topic. The MIT Biomimetics Robotics Lab, Harvard's Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering, the exploration architecture firm, and Janine Benyus's Biomimicry Institute, and a dozen others are astonishing the public with the power of emulating organisms to solve problems. What these fantastic and rapidly expanding organizations all share in common is that they are constrained by access to only a tiny fraction of possibilities. We have described fewer than 2 million of an estimated 12 million species. Described in technical jargon, few of those 2 million are tractable to engineers, designers, architects, inventors, or entrepreneurs who could be busy solving problems. By exploring what species exist, we can create something new, unprecedented, and awesomely powerful. We can create supply-side sustainability. Partnering with experts in bioinformatics, cyber infrastructure, and entrepreneurism, we can simultaneously speed an inventory of life on Earth while opening a door to a vast library of biomimicry possibilities, billions of years in the making. Imagine Syracuse as a Silicon Valley of sustainability, spinning out startup companies, fueling the biomimetic industry, already beginning to blossom, simply by prying open the store of vast knowledge. This simple question also addresses a deep, uniquely human need to understand our origins. Where did we come from? how we relate to the living world and the cosmos. Everything we flatter ourselves as being uniquely human, our upright gait, our larger-than-normal brain case, our speech, can be traced to modifications of attributes present in ancestral mammals. And everything that makes a mammal unique can be traced even further back to its ancestors. To truly understand us as humans is to explore and understand all kinds of life, tracing the history all the way back to the first single-cell ancestor. It is our most uniquely human quality to be deeply curious about this. But unless we collect specimens, make observations, preserve tissue samples and recordings, millions of the pieces of this puzzle will be forever lost. Humans 1,000 years from now will be no less curious about the meaning of their lives, but they will have access to far less evidence than we. We owe it to ourselves and to all generations to follow to preserve as much biodiversity as possible, as well as evidence of that soon to be lost. In answering this question, we also map the components of the biosphere, creating a snapshot of the world largely as we found it. Among Earth's millions of species are sensitive indicators of climate change. Flowering times, dates of insect emergence, and sudden shifts in geographic distributions are an early warning system for changes in climate, if we only know enough to interpret them. All this from one simple question. If we ask this and other right questions, imagine all that we can learn. Imagine what ESF students specially prepared to be a new kind of environmental leader can accomplish. Imagine what a new American environmentalism can do by engaging our entire society to overcome the impediments of the past. Imagine lives changed when urban children come face to face with bizarre creatures and awaken their innate biophilia. Imagine unleashing the potential of billions of already tested, product-ready biomimetic models. Imagine what this amazing institution with its unique mixture of scholars, scientists, designers, and engineers, and can-do culture is capable of contributing when focused on its right questions. This won't be easy. If it were, some other institution would already be shining the light on the path to a better tomorrow. It would be difficult for a large, comprehensive university to achieve, because such institutions are rightfully pulled in many directions. It will take a small institution, uniquely focused with an environmental mission, a passion for exploration, uncompromising optimism of what the world might be, and an openness to collaboration across disciplines and far beyond its campus to achieve what the world is hungry for, environmental leadership that offers hope, that puts solving problems and having impact above all else, that sees its mission as educating and inspiring students and the public alike. It will take an institution like ESF. Thank you.